Hello and welcome to Draft Talk from Frozen Tundra Frequencies. This is Tex Western with you. Tyler Brook is joining me tonight. Tyler, what's going on?
Oh, you know, I just did a 2025 top 10 mock draft because I have no self-control and I'm already doing homework on next year's draft. I can't wait.
You are a sick, sick man, and I love it. I appreciate it.
I can't wait. Dude, Carson Beck, QB1. There's actually good running backs in this class.
Hey.
There's some wide receivers. There's some fun players. I'm actually really excited.
Nice. Good deal. Well, let's just go ahead and get into it. Been a couple days now. We're recording on Monday night. We're about 48 hours removed now from the end of the 2024 NFL draft, so we can start giving some takes on the Packers overall class. So let's just dive into it, right? Let's just start 1 through 11, since they had a whole crap load of picks, and we can take a little look at these guys and give our thoughts and get out of here. So number one, Jordan Morgan, offensive tackle, Arizona. Sounds like the Packers have every intent at playing him at left tackle to start. Just your top line thoughts on the pick, and then we can kind of talk about what that means for the offensive line.
Yeah, I talked this out with Owen Reese, who you'll hear on the podcast feed tomorrow. But like, he had a great point about getting overly fixated on specific players versus positions. And admittedly, if anyone watched the day one stream, you know, I was pretty hellbent on Graham Parton with the 25th pick. He goes a pick later. So that initial disappointment was kind of just irrational when you're so fixated on a player. And then, you know, granted, I had a day two grade on Morgan, but, you know, he's the prototypical Packers guy, right? Like an athletic, versatile guy, two-time team captain, plays really well as far as moving feet. I have no idea where they'll slot him. I know they want to try him out at left tackle. I think I still have a couple concerns as far as like overall play strength and how he handles like his anchor. But, you know, cleaning up technique can make up for so much, and you can't teach that athleticism. So it makes sense. And again, I'll never criticize an O-line pick by the Packers because Brian Gutekunst and that coaching staff know what the hell they're doing. So just let them cook.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's just interesting that as we look back, this is the first round offensive lineman since 2011, which feels like forever. But when you really think about it, right, like, Obviously they've had, you know, they found so many starting offensive linemen in day three, day two. I mean, Bakhtiari, Lindsley being fourth, fifth round picks, guys like Lang and Sitton, obviously even before that. So I don't think it should have been a surprise to anybody that they went on the line. And I think it was just, it felt like it was just more of a surprise with who the player was than necessarily the position. But I think, again, we're all pretty happy that it was like a guy like Morgan rather than Guyton, and going going for a clear tackle instead of a Graham Barton, who, you know, had those kind of questions about his size and length. And maybe would have had to shift inside potentially.
I did just look up who the last first round lineman was, and I got sad. Derek Sherrod, man, yep. Was so convinced he was going to be good.
Yeah, I mean, and who knows?
That's just strictly injury related.
Absolutely.
Right?
I mean, who knows if he doesn't break his leg against Kansas City? You know, who knows what happens there? So, yeah. All right. Well, now we get to round two, which was where all of us all of us just lost our damn minds. With the picks of Edgerrin Cooper from Texas A&M, the linebacker, and Javon Bullard, the safety out of Georgia. We've talked about it before. If you listen to the podcast on Friday night, you know how excited we were, but full-blown pants off round two with these two picks.
So I've done a little bit of a deep dive on film for Edgerrin Cooper. And I'll just start by saying it. I said it on Madison Radio today that, like, this is the most excited I've been for any Packers draft pick since Jair in 2018. Like, I'm all the way in on Edgerrin Cooper. Like, the film today, literally what you watch against Alabama is that first opening drive. He is so disruptive and dominant in the run game. I'm pretty sure Alabama had to change its entire offensive strategy for the game. Like, they started throwing deep, they're throwing away from him, they're trying to run away from him, and he's still just, like, wrecking shit. It's just, it's absolutely insane to watch. It's just his impact, his explosiveness, his fearlessness, his length. He's just so damn fast. That boy fast. It's just like the ultimate linebacker for what it seems like the Packers want to do, which is attack downhill under Jeff Hafley's scheme. And I'm just so excited, man. Like, he's the ultimate player. I can't imagine, for better or worse, I guess the best way to say it, for better or worse, it will not be boring.
Well, boring linebacker play is not something I think Packers fans want to see one way or another. And then, yeah, let's get to Bullard. I think as excited as I was for Cooper, I feel like I was more excited that they landed Bullard at 58 than any other pick in this draft, just based on the need at safety, the fit at safety with his versatility, the ability that he probably gives us to really play the safeties off of one another between him and potentially Xavier McKinney in the back end. The fit was so good. And I know we had just been on this guy as he had to be the guy if that was the strategy we were going to go with in the secondary.
Yeah, I mean, you could have talked me into Tyler Newbin. I think it would have taken some time. I have some concerns with Newbin. He was the first safety taken off the board. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think he went to the Giants in the 40s, 47. Okay. Yeah.
Like, there's a lot he contributes, but yeah. Bullard is just, I think it's the tenacity with the versatility that maybe he doesn't do anything exceptionally well, but it's also not like he does anything even like below average. So it's this nice little mix of he's a jack of all trades and master of none, but without like shitting the bed at anything. That along with just him being like what seems like an incredible human that people wanted to play with and knows what he is doing, which is paramount. I think he's just like the perfect of in a brutal safety class. Yep. In my opinion, of all the ones I watched, he was literally the only one I wanted to pair with McKinney.
Yep. All right, moving on. Day two. Marshawn Lloyd at number 88, running back out of USC. I know a lot of draft analysts were very, very high on him. I think it was Daniel Jeremiah of NFL Network had him as his number one running back. Nick Saban had him as the number two guy in the class. So certainly, you know, there's definitely plenty of talent to work with there. Some breakaway speed, nice little compact package. You know, how do you see him fitting in both in the depth chart and just in how they might use him schematically?
Oh, brother, let me tell you, the first time you see a 40-yard touchdown from this guy, it is just going to be beautiful. Yeah. He's the perfect change of pace back to Jacobs. You know, obviously much bigger body compared to Aaron Jones. Like, he's going to be taking quite a bulk of carries. You're going to hope that he can break yards or just pick off yards in chunks, right? As that workhorse, hopefully improve his efficiency from last year, which was ugly, but Raiders caveat. I had talked myself out of an Estime or Braylon Allen or any of these guys. Like, you already have the big body as your bell cow. Get the home run threat with breakaway speed. So realistically, the only two options, in my opinion, that would have been like very exciting were Lloyd or Wright. You know, granted, I wanted Wright. I can see why NFL teams would be terrified of him because, you know, he's running against literal five-man boxes, which is just obscene and a criminal to the sport of football. but with Lloyd, I mean, just if you turn on any highlight tape of him, it's just his ability to set up blockers, dip, and then like burst out as soon as he sees the crease is just so fun to watch. And he runs angry. Archon put a note in the chat that he gets the Isaiah Pacheco vibes that like he's mad at the grass, which is like the most entertaining running style. It's just the best.
So much fun.
Have you gotten a chance to watch a little bit of him yet?
A little bit, yeah. And just that burst is, I mean, it shows up on tape. It's fun. Yeah. It is so much fun. And, you know, I do wonder if they look at him maybe being, you know, I think you could use him both in zone and some gap stuff. The zone, the one cut, you know, cut and go, I think can really work for him. But I mean, he's got a little bit of power behind him too, I think, and he'll be a lot of fun. I think at the very least, he's going to be fun, and we're gonna see a couple of big breaks out of him over the course of the next couple of years.
I've got one big beef though, and it's pretty major. Yeah. They didn't give him number zero.
Yeah, so
It's number 32.
yeah,
I'm super
so
bummed.
32 is a very historic number for USC pro running backs. If you're a history guy, I feel like our good buddy John Meerdink will appreciate this. Like OJ Simpson, yeah. That's a little sensitive subject now, but OJ Marcus Allen, also great USC running back, wore 32. So I do wonder if that was a nod to USC running back history with him taking that number. But I agree. Number zero would have been awesome if he had taken it, if they had given it to him, but here we are.
Yeah, what can you
Yeah.
do? I'm a little upset. It's just the aesthetics, man. I
I get
really
it. Yeah.
you
Yeah.
Cooper got 45 though, right? Or what did Cooper
Cooper got
get?
56. He got the Nick Barnett number.
Oh, that's
So
even to me, that's even
yeah,
better. Good
that's a
aesthetics.
good one.
Yeah, that's
Yep,
great.
that'll be great. All right, moving on.
Maybe Quay needs to get off 7. Something's wrong with 7.
I hoped Cooper was going to get a single digit number. I think he plays with that
See, that's the problem. You can't have you can have
one, but
both of them have single digits or
yeah.
not one. It has to be none or
Yep,
both.
I like it. All right, well, back to linebacker at the end of round three, Tyron Hopper out of Mizzou at 91. He was a guy who had a visit with the Packers pre-draft. Not a guy that I think anybody really thought was going to go top 100, let alone top 150, probably. And it just kind of makes me wonder what the big thing was that the Packers saw in him that made them willing to take him at 91. And after the draft, say that. They basically had a round two grade on him and all the guys they got by the end of day two. What does Hopper have in terms of juice and what do you think they might have seen in him that might have pushed them to draft him as highly as they did?
Clearly, they have some like specific role in mind for Hopper. Maybe it's a coverage scheme, but they had mentioned they kind of want him to be a starter alongside Quay and Cooper, talking about like his stopping power as a tackler, which surprised me because like on film he looks kind of timid taking on blocks, and if he has a clear like laying into the backfield, I can see some hits. But other than that, just didn't feel like he was comfortable taking on blocks because he's kind of a lighter back. That being said, it sounds like he had a much better 2022 than 23. I haven't gone back and watched that yet. But that seems to be a recurring theme with like Packers picks. Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks are like the perfect examples of guys that had that like down year right before going pro, but were studs the year before. So what this is likely is like an area scout went to Missouri in 22, is like, we got to keep an eye on this kid, and just kind of like stayed in touch with him, all season of the pre-draft process. They must just fall in love with the player in person. So it may seem like a reach to us on the outside, but this is probably someone's name that they've had circled for 2 years.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to follow, and again, the fact that they had him in for a visit, if they had that good a grade on him, they'd normally only bring in guys with like top four round grades if they've got character or physical like medical issues. So just an interesting choice here on this one, as you kind of come to the end of round three. Round four, we got day three started with Evan Williams, the safety, maybe nickel, possibly based on some of the comments that we've seen out of Green Bay, out of Oregon. I know Justice, our good friend, was not a big fan of this pick, at least initially. I think still probably to this point, he's not crazy about the pick, but Packers kind of talked about maybe using him as kind of that hybrid safety nickel type of guy, where Bullard could do a little bit of that too, right? He's played a lot of nickel in his college career, so definitely seems like they're looking at versatility in the safety group as they add guys to this position.
Yeah, and it's going to be a common theme that keeps popping up on this. Like, he just loves to attack downhill. He makes big hits. He'll certainly have a role on special teams. I mean, one of the first plays I watched of him was a punt, I want to say, against Utah. He just comes flying down the field and just absolutely obliterates this kid. It was one of my favorite plays I've watched of any of the prospects so far, of the guys I had not watched leading up to the pre-draft process. And obviously he's going to become Matub's favorite player because his name is Evan Williams, and it's too perfect.
I did tweet out a picture of a bottle of Evan Williams that I have in my liquor cabinet after the pick was made. So I think Packer Ranter even gave us credit for good scouting on that one for this weekend. So, yeah. Well, we'll get to the third safety in just a minute, but first fifth round pick, Jacob Monk out of Duke. And this is a guy that I don't think any of us really had on our radar, but the more I dig into him, the more interesting he is. And some of that comes down to he's a five-year starter at Duke, playing like three or four different positions from tackle, center, guard, or tackle, guard, center all the way in. And two-year captain at Duke. Great athlete, like 9.7 RAS, something like that, and just blew away testing in his pro day. And it's one of those guys that makes you think, like, did we just miss something? And we probably just missed a tier one day three Packer as we were sort of looking at looking into these guys, because he checks all the boxes that we would normally look for a Packers lineman.
Yeah, at this point, it's just become, you know, it's the most predictable thing in the world is to find the Packers offensive lineman. It's like, did they play multiple positions? Do they have any kind of tackle experience? Were they a captain? Were they super athletic? And just there you go. You have the guy. I'm very curious to actually dive into his film, because again, another guy I just didn't watch, because anytime I'm watching Duke, you know who I'm watching. It's Graham Barton. But it just seems so interesting. From talking to Owen, it sounds like long term his position is going to probably be center in the NFL, which I'm cool with in as far as the role as a backup backer. Like, who knows if they're actually going to move Zach Tom to center. And even if that's the case long term, then Myers is gone, like, he's your backup. So it's nice to know that there's at least a guy that can play center on the backups if they decide to move on from Myers.
Yeah, we started seeing a little bit of tape coming out on him. His general athleticism and his quickness definitely seems to show up in the highlights that I've seen in the cutups and things.
Yeah, some of the footwork is kind of a mess at times. Not to say that it's always a mess, but as things get cleaned up, again, there's no team, there's no franchise in football that's going to develop guys more effectively than the Packers. So if this is a guy they like, shit, just go for it.
Absolutely. All right, moving back to defense, end of round five, second round five pick, Ketan Oladapo, safety out of Oregon State. This was one I think we kind of figured that if they had switched the Oladapo and the Williams picks, we kind of would have gotten it, right? Mm-hmm. Oladapo seems like the better overall prospect, but getting the two guys, the order that they did wasn't as widely expected as we might have thought, but certainly brings a little bit of juice as a box defender. He's got some little bit of, you know, some decent ball skills too, I think, and that versatility kind of comes into play as well.
Yeah, you literally hit the nail on the head from all of my notes. I mean, 6'2", 216. I literally wrote, you know, he's going to be a physical safety that's probably going to be a developmental box guy in day three. It's that ball skills, though, that adds that extra wrinkle to me that could make him, you know, a little more versatile than just like a traditional, I'm going to go decapitate people in the box. Because he does come away with some nice, like, interceptions, turnovers, like, from awkward angles. And then another part of my favorite part of his game, like, if he is carrying a tight end up a seam or a wide receiver, like, downfield, he does the perfect job of, like, being physical with the guy without, like, panicking or grabbing, which I think is such an underrated part of that position. Like, you can body a receiver without getting called DPI. You just can't, like, grab or hold on to him. And I think he toes that line, like, almost perfectly. So that's one of those traits I'm, like, really curious to see how that translates, because from, like, all my notes and everything I had watched from him, like, there's enough there that it may not take him long to find the field, honestly.
He's also got great hair. Can we just talk about that for just a half a second? He had his hair dyed orange, I think, for at least a little bit of his time at Oregon State. That was great. Absolutely loved that. And I think he dyed it pink or something fun at some point during his tenure at Oregon State. So fun guy. Seems like. Yeah, it's a little bit of a different role than what they probably see Bullard or Williams playing, but I'll just be very fascinated to see what they decide to do with these safeties as we go along here, moving into this season, because you got guys potentially playing very different roles, and I mean, again, this team has completely remade the safety room this entire offseason from last year.
I think what I love about all the safeties and DBs they drafted, like positional versatility is going to get you on the field. And the more versatile guys you have, the harder it's going to be for opposing offenses to game plan. Because, like, again, quarterbacks are trying to identify guys based like, okay, it's this player. He's like usually like a safety or a post safety or something like that. But if you have guys that play slot, post, box, like all over the field, and you have multiple of those guys, it's just extra homework for like the more cerebral quarterbacks. And for the younger guys, they have no idea what the hell's happening, and it can lead to all kinds of mistakes, which, again, we mentioned this in one of the reaction pods, just it's the perfect move to make, in my opinion, when you're about to be in a division with two rookie quarterbacks. Like, I just think it's a home run.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely. All right. Getting down to the end of the draft here. Travis Glover, sixth round pick, offensive tackle out of Georgia State. Big dude, massive, massive arms. Super big, super long. Older guy, 24, I think, coming out in the draft. Thoughts? I mean, is he a potential long-term swing tackle? Wasn't a super athlete, but any initial thoughts on him off the top?
Yeah, it's so interesting because, you know, it's a day three guy, but he's not the athletic testing. But I mean, if you just showed me a picture of that guy, I'd be like, yeah, I'll take a sixth round pick on that dude. Are you serious? That looks awesome. He plays with a ton of play strength. It looks like he's a better athlete than I think the testing shows. But I think he's a bit stiff. I think he's just kind of a little uncoordinated as far as technique and stuff like that. And truthfully, I wouldn't hate him as a guard just because I think it kind of his play style would make sense as like a road grader in the run game. And I think a lot of his deficiencies would be negated or at least diminished being kicked inside. No idea, though. Let's be honest. It's a tackle out of Georgia State we had not heard of until his name was called. So who knows? Yep. Again, let Goot cook. Pick your own lineman, man. I trust you.
Yep. Yeah, not much more to add there, so let's just move on to the last two picks in round seven. Starting off with Michael Pratt, quarterback out of Tulane, guy that most draft analysts had him going like borderline day two, maybe round four probably at the latest. Ends up lasting until pick 245 in the seventh round. Good numbers the last 2 years at Tulane. And just it'll be really interesting to see, you know, what the backup quarterback battle looks like in camp this year between him and Sean Clifford.
Hey, never forget that he beat Caleb Williams in the Cotton Bowl. Many people forget
that game. I was thinking about that during, you know, as we were working through this draft and this draft pick a little bit. That game was absolutely bonkers. Now,
oh, it was a great game. Yeah,
Tajay Spears, who was a draft pick last year, the Tennessee Titans, was a guy that we both liked, you know, loved from the combine and loved his tape and everything. He was a superstar in that game. I think he had like 200 rushing yards and four touchdowns, but Pratt had a good game too. A couple of touchdowns, about 250 passing. And one of the things I kept hearing about him and seeing as we kind of followed him a little bit was he just made a ton of crazy clutch throws late in games. And leading Tulane of all programs to back-to-back 10-win seasons is a pretty substantial accomplishment, not to mention, you know, taking them to a New Year's Six Bowl game.
Yeah, starting as a true freshman and being a three-time captain. Again, there's a pattern here. A lot of captains in this draft class. I'm very intrigued. I think he can win the QB2 battle just because I think he has a little more to give than Clifford. Clifford is smart as hell, it seems like, just from watching film, even if the talent's not there. But for Pratt, it's just like the pocket presence is there. Like in the moment, he does a good job of finding like the windows to throw. And then he has like not the best arm. It's not even a good arm, but like he can drop it in the bucket when needed with touch. So those are two good enough qualities for me. And he's experienced that, you know, screw it. Let's see what he can do. And it'll actually be fun. Like I'm excited to watch a quarterback in the preseason and see what he can do.
Yeah, for sure. And he's a guy who improved his completion percentage every year of his 4 years as a starter. And again, you mentioned starting for 4 years, that's something that generally correlates to some level of NFL success. So
for sure.
It'll be fun it'll be a fun battle this August and it'll keep us watching at least late into preseason games for that month. And then finally, let's wrap it up. 255, Kalen King, the corner out of Penn State. I think this is one of those flyer picks where, you know, they're banking on a guy who had great tape 2 years ago, took a massive step back in 2023. But you gotta look at a player like that who was looked at as recently as a year ago as a potential first round pick in 2024, and hope that your coaching staff can get something out of him moving forward.
Yeah, there's got to be another reason besides just the drop off in play that had him fall as far as he did. Like, it's not like he's a terrible athlete.
Right.
And you would think that someone with 2022 tape that was like an All-American by some outlets in 2022 would get like at least some kind of day three shot, and not like borderline Mr. like picks away from being Mr. Irrelevant. Is there a medical thing? Is there an off-field thing? Like, I hate to speculate on any of this because I think it's unfair to the kid. But clearly, like, there's something else that we don't know that would result in him falling as far as he did. That being said, his reaction to getting drafted alone, it has me rooting for the kid. Like, I just think he is so ready to come in with the chip on his shoulder in a pretty – what's going to be a very competitive cornerback room with a coach who specializes in developing DBs and Jeff Hafley, which – that part gets me very excited because, like, if you can harness what he did in 2022, I mean, Jaden Reed, Sauce Gardner, all these like pros are coming out and being like, there's no way in hell he should have been a seventh round pick. It's got me excited. Like, I've never been fired up for the last pick in a draft. Like, I'm rooting for you, Kalen. Like, you know, Godspeed. Can't wait to see what you can do in camp.
Well, I mean, obviously the Packers got a quality cornerback in the seventh round last year in Carrington Valentine. And I mean, he kind of came out of nowhere. None of us kind of knew who he was when they drafted him last season. And it was only once we really sort of started digging into the tape that we sort of thought, okay, maybe there is something here on this guy. That's not the case for King. I mean, he's got great 2022 tape, and it just kind of all sort of fell apart this last season. Again, it really feels like this is one of those instances where they're looking at kind of a player trying to bring him in and work with his coaching staff and recapture that magic that he had 2 years ago. And again, you mentioned that with Hopper, another guy who had good tape 2 years ago. Wicks was that case in last year's draft class. Reed, to some extent, definitely feels like a distressed asset for whatever reason that they decided, okay, we're going to take a flyer on this guy. See what we can make out of him and see if he can live up to that potential that he showed 2 years ago.
Yeah. All in all, just, I know like the grades are like, you know, cautiously optimistic or some are a little, you know, neutral on this class. I love this class. I think, you know, Cheesehead TV did the best comparisons. Like, you ate your vegetables on day one, you got the boring offensive lineman, and then you just like you swing for the fences in day two, and then, you know, you've obviously just added much needed depth across the board in day three. It's literally all the things that check the boxes of what we need. Like, hey, you need to get starters at linebacker and safety, depth on the O-line, depth at safety, maybe a corner, and then you got your change of pace back. Just exciting across the board, man. This is the kind of draft class you need if it hits to contend for multiple Super Bowls in the Jordan Love era, which is seeming like a possibility, knock on wood.
Well, and I think the last thing on this draft class that I want to touch on is the position contrasts against last year, right? Last year was very heavy on the offensive weapons, receivers, tight ends, you know, and then they kind of filled out on day three with some role players. This year, very heavy offensive line and defense, specifically linebacker and safety. And I mean, all three of those positions, they hit at least twice, two of them, they hit three times. And this is starting to be Gutekunst's MO, right? Is really when he sees a position that this roster needs, he's going to hit it hard in the draft with multiple picks, guys that they like. And obviously last year it worked out with Reed and Wicks at receiver, with the two tight ends on day two. And you know, if they have remotely the success with this draft class that they had last year, this defense is going to be in a much better shape by the end of 2024.
I can't wait, man. Let's just get to training camp and preseason. Oh wait, that's months away. Outstanding. Oh no.
Well,
that's why, look, I watched 2025, dude.
Well, look, we got rookie minicamp coming up. potentially this, I don't know if they've got the dates confirmed, if it's this coming weekend or the weekend after, but sometime in the next 2 weeks. So that's coming down the pike, and then OTA start and better in minicamp. I mean, it's coming. It's coming close. Before we call it a night, let's talk. There's a couple of UDFAs that I think are worth mentioning. Packers signed, I think there's eight names that are floated out there as potential signings. They only had seven roster spots, so one of those is probably a rookie minicamp invite rather than a formal signing. But two guys we know for a fact have signed a contract. Donovan Jennings, offensive lineman out of South Florida, who got more guaranteed money than I can ever remember the Packers giving an undrafted free agent. I think it was $100,000 in guaranteed base salary, which tells you that they look at him as a guy who can make this roster as a probably a guard, I would imagine. But even again, another guy who played tackle in college and is probably going to be a guard in the NFL. I don't want to steal too much thunder because I know you talked to Owen Reese, our good friend, and are going to have this in the feed probably tomorrow about him. But just really quick, any takeaways to kind of preview your discussions about Jennings?
Yeah, I mean, he seemed pretty confident that he'd be a guard at the next level, but like he's a Jennings is a Shrine Bowl guy, so Reese has gotten to know him. He said he was actually one of
Nice.
their favorite guys at the Shrine Bowl. I'm just looking because obviously I haven't watched him yet. Come on, I had so many other guys to watch right now. NFL
I
Network
mean,
did. Oh, go ahead, go ahead.
you mean you didn't watch like the 50th offensive lineman on the board? Come on, man.
Archon was pulling me into watching like the 26th, so I was never going to get here. NFL.com did have Jennings as like a sixth, seventh round pick, so that's intriguing value. And mentions one of my favorite parts about a blocker is that he explodes his hips into the blocks. Hip explosion, huge dude. Can't emphasize enough how much that like you don't have to be the biggest guy, but if you can figure out hip explosion, you can really dominate at the point of attack. Also said he operates well as a bowler, so those two things have me excited, especially if he's going to play guard as a developmental guy. So I'll be keeping an eye on him.
Nice. And then the other guy that's worth mentioning, long snapper, Peter Bowden out of Wisconsin.
This is all you, dude. I'm not watching long
This is
snappers.
no, absolutely. But as a Wisconsin grad, as someone who's watched him, I do not remember a bad snap from Wisconsin in the last 3 years on a place kick or a punt. He was a semi or a finalist, last three finalists for the Patrick Manley Award, which is given to the best long snapper in college football. So certainly, and also he was Dane Brugler's number one ranked long snapper in this class, which Dane, you ranked long snappers. My hat is off to you for doing the Lord's work. But yeah, staying home in Green Bay got a, I think, a modest signing bonus. But frankly, I will be surprised if he is not the Packers' long snapper come week one. Probably beating up Matt Orzech for that job in training camp.
Just don't be the guy that says the long snapper quietly had a good training camp. Look like an idiot afterwards.
Yeah, well, we'll see. That'll be a nice little, fostering competition at every position across the roster. Appreciate it. Packers now have two punters, two kickers, and two long snappers. So special teams, everybody will be getting a nice little workout, which will be good.
Special teams, special players, isn't that the thing? I don't know. I'm too getting too old for all the TikTok trends and stuff. I don't even have TikTok. It's that, oh wow. Yeah, we're getting there.
Yep. Well, we're getting late tonight, so I think we'll call it a wrap. But as always, thank you for joining me tonight. You'll have your discussion with Owen. I think that's the plan to be in the feed tomorrow evening, Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, if that's correct. Looking
Yeah.
forward to hear what you guys have to say, really, about those offensive line draft picks, because that's definitely Owen's specialty.
Yeah, I mean, he's an assistant offensive line coach at college, so like there's some legitimate, I mean, some of the technical stuff, I mean, I was learning shit just hearing him talk, so it was really great. That'll be out Wednesday morning. Already got that scheduled in the feed. And then I got a rookie preview on Edgerrin Cooper coming out this week, been watching the film on him. That'll be really fun because that boy fast.
Love it. Yeah, we might be working on some t-shirts or a little bit of merch or something. So keep an eye out for that if you're a Cooper fan. We'll see what we can do on that one. So some stuff in the works. But all right, all told, fun weekend. As always, this is always one of the best weekends of the year for me personally. Just getting to spend as much time, talking about all these guys and watching these picks come in. And I know it's certainly one of your favorite weeks of the year. And hopefully everybody had a good time this weekend.
Yeah, and then Goot can go to rehab for being addicted to picks, because it seems like he only has like a normal amount of picks for 2025 so far, until he trades for more.
Yep, only a matter of time. All right. Well, thank you for joining me tonight, Tyler. Appreciate it. And as always, keep listening to the feed, increase in touch with frequencies. Keep checking our written workout at Acme Packing Company. And as always, go Pack Out.